Let's get to Genesis 12. You are familiar with this passage, I'm absolutely certain. Genesis 12. The Lord had said to Abram on page 8 now, "Leave your country, your people, your father's house, go to the land I will show you. I'll make you a great nation and I will bless you. I will make your name great and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you. Whoever curses you, I will curse. And all peoples on earth will be blessed through you." Now, how do you think that made this 90-year-old man who was childless feel? "I'm going to make a great nation out of you." In fact, he says, all the people on the earth are going to be blessed through you. Wow. That's pretty amazing. I don't know how Abraham reacted to that immediately. I know what he eventually did because God had just told him. He said, you need to leave home. You need to leave your father's house and you need to go to a country I'm going to show you. So Abraham goes home, puts his arm around Sarah and says, "Babe, I just got word from God. It's time for us to go. We're going to leave." "What? We're going to leave. Where are we going?" "I don't know. He said he would show us." But more than that, he told me that he's going to make a great nation from us, and through us, he's going to bless every person who will ever live on the earth. "What you been drinking, boy?" That's crazy. They packed up and went. Praise God for their faith. For 25 years, they struggled. Now, they tried. Abraham said 10 years passed. And Abraham came before God and he said, "Okay, God, I still don't have any kids. I've got this guy here who is the head of my household, Eliezer, my servant. He's going to inherit this. This is the one I'm sure that you had told me that you," and God said, no. "No, he's not the one. Hang in there." Another few years passed, maybe 5, 7. Sarah went to Abraham and she said, "Look, God still hasn't done what he said he was going to do. So here's what I'd like you to do. I want you to take my handmaid, Hagar, and I want you to have a baby with her so that you can have an heir." And Abraham said, "Okie dokie." So he laid with Hagar. She conceived. A son was born, Ishmael. But it didn't take long for that to go south, because Sarah became so jealous of Hagar. They really were, man, this hen fight got ugly really quick. And eventually she said to Abraham, "Look," I'm sure she stuck her finger right in his face and said, "Look here, boy, you got to get rid of that woman and that child of hers. I know it's your son, but he is not going to share in the inheritance of my son." This is after Isaac was born. So Abraham sent her away. It broke his heart. God came to him and he said, "It's okay. Don't worry. I'm going to take care of the boy. I know he's your son and I'm going to take care of him. I'm going to bless him." And so they went away. 25 years they struggled with questions. How's God going to do this? When's it going to come about? Does he really know what he's doing? 25 years, that's a long time. That's a quarter of a century. Old age overtook them. They kept trusting God to keep his promise, and finally Isaac is born. Now, and that's in Genesis chapter 20, I think it is, when Isaac is born. Well, now their life is wonderful. They have laughter in their tent again. They're a family, and Abraham was You know, he was really happy that now they've got this boy. He circumcised him on the eighth day, just like God had commanded him to back in Genesis 17. Named him Isaac. That young kid brought a lot of happiness to that family in their old age. Abraham taught him how to hunt and fish and all the stuff he'd need to know in order to survive. Do you think Abraham and Sarah had any expectation of God at that point beyond where they were living at that moment? It's a judgment question. If they really heard what God said to them way back there, then certainly they have some expectation God's going to use this son to somehow do something that's going to have a ripple effect through all the families that will ever live on the earth. But hey, that'd been 30 years ago, at least. It's hard to remember back that far. I don't know. I seriously doubt that they had any expectation that God is going to do anything else. Just let it flow. But God wasn't through. Out of the clear blue sky, God shows up again, totally unexpectedly. God appears to Abraham again in Genesis chapter 22. God says to him, I want you to take your only son Isaac to the mountains here in Moriah and offer him as a sacrifice to me. Would that have shocked you? I mean, just the very act that he's commanding is a shock, isn't it? To take a human life, well, that sounds like something the people who didn't believe in God would do. Totally out of character with the fatherhood of God. But he's challenging the fatherhood not only of Abraham, but of himself. And so, can you imagine Abraham getting ready to make this trip? He knows it's at least a 3-day journey to Mount Moriah. So he's got to get all this stuff together, gather up all the materials that they're going to need because they're going to go out here and offer a sacrifice. That's not the first time he's ever done this. He's done it before. And so finally he gets all the stuff together and here they go. 3 days they go into the wilderness. They come to Mount Moriah. Abraham told the servant what? You remember? He told his servants, he said, you guys stay here with the stuff. The boy and I are going to go yonder and worship and pray. And then what did he say, Gene? We will come back. We're going to go there and worship on the mountain, and then we'll come back. What's that indicate to you? He wasn't going to kill him. Do you think he had confidence in that? Sure, because he takes little Isaac, he puts the wood on Isaac's shoulder, he carries the censer with the live coals they're going to have to use to build the fire, and here they go up the mountain, and all of a sudden Isaac is tugging on his leg, and he says, hey, Pop, here's the wood, and here's the censer with the coals, but where's the sacrifice? See, he'd done this before too. Abraham didn't tell him what God said to him, did he? He did not say, son, we're going up here and you're going to be the sacrifice. No. He said, God will provide himself a sacrifice. See, I think he worked all of that out during all that time he's gathering up this stuff that's going to be required to go and offer this sacrifice. He worked through it. I don't think that faith was instantaneous. Being a father myself, God told me to do something like that. My natural instinct would be to argue with him. What? You're kidding me. I can't do that. This is my blood. My kid. I can't kill him. What are you talking? Mm-mm. I don't know if Abraham argued with God in his mind or not. We're not told. We're just told what he did. So they go up. Abraham, he constructs the altar with the stones, lays the wood on it. He takes little Isaac and lays him down on the wood. He probably tied his hands and feet somehow. He raised the knife. Dramatic moment in Bible history. Very dramatic moment. You better get the drama of it. His son is laying right there on that stone altar he just built on top of the wood, and he raised the knife, and the angel of the Lord stopped him. Now, Paul would say many years later in Romans chapter 4 that Abraham knew that if he took that boy's life, that God could raise him from the dead because of the promise God had previously made. It's still one of the most dramatic moments in the Bible for me. As Abraham was just about to start that deadly downward arc into the flesh of his son, the angel says, Abraham, do you know what he said? What did Abraham say? Here I am. Wow. I don't know what that means to you. To me, it means I'm here. I'm here. I've got the knife in my hand. I don't understand all this, but I'm here. He could have been somewhere else, couldn't he? He could have, you know, even after they got there, he could have said, I can't do this. I'm going back home and I'll take my chances with God later. Here I am. I don't understand everything, but I'm going to do your will. That's more important to me than having all my questions answered. And so you remember the story. The ram caught in the bush, and Abraham went and took the ram and offered that as a sacrifice. Now on page 9, let's pick up the narrative in verse 12, Genesis 22. Do not lay a hand on the boy, he said. Now I know that you fear God because you've not withheld from me your son, your only son. Abraham looked up there in a thicket. He saw a ram caught by its horns. He went over, took the ram, sacrificed it as a burnt offering instead of his son. So Abraham called that place, the Lord will provide. And when Moses wrote this hundreds of years later, it was still said. That became a conundrum among the people of God, the Israelites. To this day it is said, on the mountain of the Lord it will be provided. So the angel of the Lord called to Abraham from heaven a second time and said, I swear by myself, declares the Lord, that because you've done this and have not withheld your son, I will surely bless you, make your descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky and as the sand on the seashore. Your descendants will take possession of the cities of their enemies, and through your offspring, all nations on earth will be blessed because you have obeyed me. And see, here's the gist of all of this. God did live up to all of Abraham's expectations, even beyond, actually. But he still wanted to prove to Abraham and Sarah and to you and I something crucial, and to Satan. Isaac was not the end of the promise that God had made to his father. See, this is what the Jews to this very day believe. It's what many religious people in the world believe. Isaac was the end of the promise. Not so. Because you see, that word, he says, through your offspring, all nations on earth will be blessed because you've obeyed me. That word typically was used to refer to the Gentiles, all the non-Jews. But there's another deal here. What in the world does Abraham's willingness to offer his son as a human sacrifice have to do with your salvation? God offered his son. That's one picture that's there. It can be a picture of God offering his own son That might be a little bit suspect because Abraham didn't actually offer his son as a sacrifice. Maybe there's something beyond that, Jesse. He was obedient even though it really hurt. You see, Satan forever, ever since the Garden of Eden, Satan has taunted God. Job indicates to us that Satan consistently came into the presence of God and said, "These people don't care about you. The only reason they do what you tell them is because of what you give them. They don't love you." Abraham proves differently, does he not? There are people in this world who will hear the voice of God and obey his words even in the most extremely imaginal circumstances. There are people who will obey God regardless. And there's a lot of them in the world today. You see, that's a statement to Satan. All these people, ever since the Garden of Eden, Satan assumed that given the choice, men, women, they will always choose the forbidden fruit rather than to hear God. But boy, he makes a big mistake assuming that. Yeah, it's true that we all choose the forbidden fruit until we meet Jesus Christ. Wow, what a difference that makes. So the book of Genesis ends 420 years later. I want you to look at this. Look at Genesis chapter 50. This is a great, great statement, I think. Genesis chapter 50. This is a whole lot of years later. Verse 24. Joseph said to his brothers, "I'm about to die." Now, this is after Joseph had become the real ruler, the governor, you might say, of the whole land of Egypt. He brought his father and all of his kinspeople down into Egypt where they lived. They survived through the famine that had swept throughout the whole land. And now he tells his brothers, "I'm about to die. But God will surely come to your aid and take you up out of this land to the land he promised on oath to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob." You see the connection, don't you? It's important that you get this before we take the next step. "And Joseph made the sons of Israel swear an oath and said, 'God will surely come to your aid, and then you must carry my bones up from this place.'" See, the Israelites, they had to have some concept of the promise that God had made here, or else there would be no way to explain the bones of Joseph. Whose bones are these, and why do we have these? What's this all about? Why are we keeping these? Why isn't this guy buried? Because he told them to take him back and bury him where his great-grandfather was buried. So Joseph died at the age of 110. After they embalmed him, he was placed in a coffin in Egypt. He knew about the promise. Come over to Exodus 13. Let me show you something here. This is just doubly cool, I think. Exodus chapter 13, verse 19. Now this is after the Israelites have started the Exodus out of Egypt. They took all kinds of plunder with them and so forth that because of God, the Egyptians just willingly gave them. But look at this. Verse 19, "Moses took the bones of Joseph with him because Joseph had made the sons of Israel swear on oath. He had said, 'God will surely come to your aid, then you must carry my bones up with you from this place.'" Wow. I don't know about you, but I just think that's just really cool. It'd been a long time. You remember how many years they were slaves in Egypt? 4 centuries. Cheryl is sharing with us that one of the managers that he worked for one time made the statement to the people that worked under him, I don't need try. I need do. Try's everywhere, isn't it? I don't know, I'll try. What does that mean? It may not mean anything. You're either going to do it or you aren't. They carried the bones of Joseph up out of Egypt. Now, at the bottom of page 9, here are the things, 5 things that are important for you to keep in mind. We're tracking a story here now. God made a promise to every member of the human family thousands of years ago. His intention was to bless all people, every nation, every family. This blessing would come to the world through Abraham's offspring. Even though it had been 30 years, give or take, since God made the original promise to Abraham, he repeats it to him at Genesis 22 to let Abraham know he hadn't forgotten. And that Isaac was not the end of the promise. And then the book of Genesis ends with Joseph looking ahead to the same promise God had made to his great-grandfather 420 years earlier. All right, let's turn the page. Moses comes on the scene now. But in order to get his story, we need to go to Acts 7 rather than Exodus chapter 2, where he's born. Because here in this great sermon, Stephen gives a synopsis, really, of the history of Israel in this great sermon that he preached just before he was stoned to death by the Israelites, by the Jews in Jerusalem. He says this, Acts 7 and 17 and following, as the time drew near for God to fulfill his promise to Abraham, the number of our people in Egypt greatly increased. Then another king who knew nothing about Joseph became ruler of Egypt. He dealt treacherously with the people. At that time, Moses was born. And he says he was no ordinary child. I'll say. Pharaoh's daughter took him, raised him as her own son. Moses was educated in all the wisdom of the Egyptians, powerful in speech and action. He's very highly educated. He knew what he was doing. But then when he was 40 years old, he decided to visit his fellow Israelites. Now, are you surprised that these people didn't reach out and embrace him as their brother? You see, here's the deal. Moses was a prince of Egypt, and he lived in luxury every day while these people slaved away making bricks out of straw. And it got so bad that eventually Pharaoh even told them, we're not giving you straw anymore, you got to go gather your own. But you still have to make the same complement of bricks. So it's understandable when Moses comes down, he starts walking around, he's saying, hey, bro, what's up, cuz? These people, they don't relate to him. He's an Egyptian to them. He's not one of them. And so here's what happens. When Moses was 40 years old, he decided to visit his fellow Israelites. He saw one of them being mistreated by an Egyptian. And like any good Israelite, he went to his defense and avenged him by killing the Egyptian. Get this. Moses thought that his own people would realize that God was using him to rescue them, but they did not. See, this is why we had to come to Acts 7. You can't get that in Exodus chapter 2. It doesn't say that. The Holy Spirit revealed this thousands of years later. Moses knew something that they didn't. They should have. They should have had some kind of concept that God was going to do something to bring them up out of the land. But my goodness, that's generations ago for them. All they know is hard labor every day, sweat and toil. So one of the guys said to him, who do you think you are? I saw you kill that Egyptian the other day. Yesterday it was. I saw you kill that Egyptian. This caused Moses to flee to the desert of Midian, the wilderness. He was in that wilderness for 40 years in exile from the mission he had been born to, that God had appointed him to. Every day, this is my opinion, you take it as such. The Bible doesn't say this. In my spirit, I believe this, that every single day for 40 years, Moses lived with the knowledge that one day God's going to show up, because he left unfinished business back in Egypt. Well, of course, it happened, as you all know. Every morning for 40 years, Moses got well for at least 35 maybe. He got up in the morning, went out into the desert, herding his father-in-law's sheep and so forth. And one day he took them over near this mountain. I don't think that's the first time he'd ever been to that mountain. But this was the first time he'd ever seen anything like that on that mountain, because there's a bush up there that was burning. And it kept on burning. I know that in his gut, he knew this is it. Just like Job did. Job railed at God, on and on and on and on. Why? But one day out of the corner of his eye, he saw this little whirlwind, a dust devil off in the distance. But it was moving towards him, and it kept getting bigger. And Job knew in his spirit exactly what's happening. God showed up. And he said, okay, you've asked me all these questions. Now let me ask you one. Where were you when I hung the stars out there on nothing? And so God asked Job 40 questions in very rapid succession. And finally, he said, I've spoken again and again, but now I speak no more. I lay my hand across my mouth. When God appears to Moses, he said to him, take your shoes off. When he approached that bush, he knew what was going to happen. And God said to him, take your shoes off, because the place where you're standing is holy ground. Now my question is, what is holy ground for us? For him, it was standing there in the presence of God at a bush. Is there still holy ground today? What makes it holy? What made that ground holy? Yeah. Presence of God. You know, we sing this song. I don't know if we sung this song since I've been here or not. This is holy ground. We're standing on holy ground. For the Lord is present, and where he is holy. Is that true? Do you experience that every time you come here to worship him? Oh, I pray you do. I pray you do. I have such a great respect for mothers of young kids who constantly are distracted from being holy before God. I told a young mother not long ago how much I appreciated her because she had three little kids. I have such a high regard for any young mother who can drive a vehicle with two or three little kids in it. Constant yelling, Mom, 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 Mom. He's touching me. Mom, tell her to leave me. You know, I have a very deep respect for any mother who can do that, because it's a huge, huge undertaking. holy ground. What is that for you? Is God still on that mountain over there in a desert somewhere? Mount Horeb. You know what Mount Horeb is? It's Mount Sinai. Does he still dwell on that mountain? Oh, he could be if he wants to, can't he? But you can go over there now and you won't find a bush burning, will you? You think, Gene? No. You won't even find the ashes from that one. What is holy ground for you? For me? That holy ground that Moses stood on that God told him to take his shoes off. For me, it's a place deep inside of me that I protect ferociously. It's where I meet God. We're driving up here late this afternoon and wow, what a sunset. Rosie remarked about it and I told her, I said, yeah, a lot of times I go out walking in the late afternoon and I just say, God, what an artist you are. Wow, this is just so amazing. Thank you. To me, holy ground is within me. It's not in a bush. It's not in a church building. It's something I carry around with me all the time where I meet Him. Communicate with Him. Live with Him. Joshua, you know, the only other person in the Bible that God ever told him, take your shoes off because you're on holy ground, was Joshua. And it was on the night, it's probably late afternoon, before the Battle of Jericho. The angel of the Lord met Joshua on the road. And Joshua saw him and he said, are you for us or for the enemy? And the angel of the Lord said, neither. I'm here to do the will of God. What about you? You need to take your shoes off because where you're standing is holy ground. See, it wasn't the presence of God there. It was the mission. I think it's the same thing with Moses. There are all kinds of people that God appeared to in the Bible, but he never told them to take your shoes off because you're standing on holy ground. It's all about the mission that he's sending them on. And you and me too. And of course, Jesus' words in John 14:23, he said, if any man will invite us in, the Father and I will come and we'll make our home with him. Have you let God move in with you yet? All you have to do is invite him. Well, Jesus said, we'll come and make our home with him. We'll just move in. Holy ground. God speaks. He says, Moses, I'm sending you to Pharaoh. Moses said, what? Send somebody else. I can't do this. The question is, why is he arguing with God? I don't know. He had his reasons. Why do you argue with God? Then the moment of absolute truth. God's anger burned against Moses. Wow. If that don't get your attention, you're dead. I don't know exactly what that means, but I know that whatever it was, Moses felt it. He understood it. He heard it because he finally shut up and started listening. Does that resonate with your spirit? The next session, I want you to think about this. And I think I had a question over in here on page 17. God gave Moses a wooden staff to validate his mission. What's he given you? Moses used that staff many, many times the rest of his life to do the will of God. It was a symbol of the presence of God with him. What has God given you? For the same reason. His word? What else? His spirit. See, without his spirit, That's just words on paper. But his spirit energizes it. Now here's your assignment. I want you to get with your partner and spend a little bit of quality time and talk about this on page 15. Something to think about. How we may often respond to God the way Moses did. I've got several things there at the bottom of page 15. I want you to talk about those. See if any of that resonates with you. Because before we're through here, God's going to ask you to do something you're very uncomfortable with. But by the time we get there, my prayer is that your comfort level will have been raised dramatically. Because you'll know what that's about. So talk about that. Then I want you to go to Appendix A, pages 60 through 62. Work your way through this personal spiritual inventory, because this is what we're going to talk about next week. Our whole time is going to be spent not just talking about this inventory, but we're going to do something very special. I'm going to break you up into smaller groups. We're going to spread out all over this auditorium, and I want to give you about 30 or 35 minutes to talk about something very, very special in a smaller group. You'll come out of that, I guarantee you, feeling really good. We're going to begin with a discussion next week of these two short exercises. So take this with you. We're not going to go into the next session here, which starts on page 18. We're not going to go into that yet because I want us to spend some time with this inventory. Now, some of you have already done it. If you have, that's fine. But talk about it with your partner, okay? Let's pray together. Father, thank you for giving us this time together. Thank you for challenging us and encouraging us through Abraham and his faith and through Moses and his pure humanness like our own. Thank you for leading him past his doubts and his fears to just obey you. We're so happy, Father, to be your children and to serve you in your kingdom. Bless us through this week and give us the challenges that you want us to have. In Jesus' name, amen.